The Ten Commandments. Now, these might be really familiar to you, or they might not be that familiar to you because you said, well, Jesus has come along and these are all very restrictive rules, and Jesus has come and simplified them all and said, love the Lord your God with all your heart, your soul, your mind and strength, and love your neighbour as yourself. So we don't really need to look at the Ten Commandments anymore because Jesus made it more simple. Well, fair enough, he did. Bear that in mind, what Jesus said, as this morning we are going to go back and look at the Ten Commandments, because I actually think they have a lot more to say to us and we are missing some of its power. But I know that lots of us like to be doing something whilst we're listening, and it's not always easy to listen to the person at the front. So if you want to, whilst I'm talking, if you would like to make one of these, you might recognise these from sort of different settings, but you can make one of these. I've got a sheet here and there's scissors at the front, so feel free to take this and a pair of scissors, and Rebecca knows how to fold it if you don't know how to fold them. So you can be going on with this if you want whilst I'm chatting. It's a useful, helpful way for us to learn these Ten Commandments. But first, I want us to do some work of placing this account, this bit of the Bible that we've just read, in the whole story of the Bible, because actually it's really important to know its context and to know why it's being spoken. So, in this big scheme of the whole Bible story, we've had the patriarchs. We've had Abraham and Sarah and Isaac. They had Isaac, and then Isaac and Rebekah had Esau and Jacob. Now, Jacob was renamed Israel, and Jacob had those 12 sons, remember? Those 12 sons of Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat fame. And those 12 sons, Joseph being one of them, had a long and dysfunctional family story in the Bible. It goes on for many chapters, more than many other families get in the Bible. And they end up in Cana, which is where they lived until there was a famine, and they all end up in Egypt. So God's people, the Israelites, i.e. those people that came through Israel, the person of Jacob, the Israelites end up in Egypt. And whilst they're living in Egypt, in relative peace, they prosper and they become so numerous and they do so well in the land that they actually outnumber the Egyptians in Egypt. I don't know if you ever noticed that, but they actually begin to outnumber all of the Egyptians in the land of Egypt. They're that many. At that point, the Egyptians notice and get a little bit nervous and start to be fearful of all of the Israelites. And so they decide to clamp down on them, and they decide to make them their slaves, and they decide to essentially, well, enslave a whole nation. And it's out of this period of brutal slavery that Moses rescues God's people. So that's where we get the Exodus, that movement to freedom. God's people held in slavery, freed, and they end up in the desert. It's in the desert that God meets them and speaks to them through Moses and gives them these Ten Commandments. Why do I start with all that, you might ask? Well, it's really important for us to understand the situation of the people who are listening to this, the situation of the people who are hearing God speak to them. Because we can run the risk in our current society where we have many different voices, different religions, different people claiming different ways of living your life well, we can think that what God was saying, it's just like another religious manifesto that God brought out for the Israelites. It's a new way to live amongst many similar competing claims. But actually, this is not like that. It's not another self-help book helping them to find a new way to live that's about a bit better than they previously had. This really is a new beginning. We don't know how long, actually, God's people were slaves in Egypt. It's not entirely clear the length of time that they were actually enslaved. But it's completely feasible that there is an entire generation in that crowd in the desert that only know slavery, that only know what it's like to have someone else control your life. to have no agency of your own. These people have been through, regardless of how long it was, they have been through major trauma. And now they've been brought dramatically out into the desert wilderness. They are free. But they're also free. Completely free. There are no boundaries. There's no defined land. There's no defined settlement. There's no defined structure. And there are thousands of them. We're not talking about that little original family of Jacob's. There are now thousands of Israelites. This is a massive group, and there is real potential for disordered chaos in this wilderness. And it's into this mass of traumatized, bewildered, wounded people that God speaks a way forward, a way of structuring their society, a way of creating who they are as a new people, free from slavery. This is where we get the Ten Commandments, the 10 guiding principles for a good way to live. And first and foremost, most important, God reminds them that it was God who freed them. It was God who heard their cries of desperation in Egypt and came to rescue them through Moses. It was God who wanted to bring them this freedom and fresh start. Although it's not said at the very beginning, God is saying, this is done through love. I love you and wanted to rescue you. And then the whole of the rest of the Ten Commandments are a working out of what this love looks like and how people live in response to it. So we're going to start with a general overview to get a picture. And for this, I do actually need a couple of volunteers, if anyone is willing to come and be a volunteer. Patina, please, yes, come and help me. I need another person too, but you can think about it. For a moment, we're all right with Patina. Right, I'm going to give you a stick. Please, hold that and go stand in the middle. I want you to notice the shape of these commandments. This might be familiar to you, but for some of you, it might not be. Does anyone know what the first commandment is? Feel free to look it up in the Bible. This is not a test. This is just a working out together. Yes? I am the Lord your God. You must not worship any other gods except me. Can you hold this straight up in front of you like this? I'm going to just pin these. Okay? Sorry that you're going to be hidden behind them. Okay, the next one? Yeah, Albert. Do you know the next commandment? You're... Oh, hold on to that thought, coming up later. But Susan said, you must, I can't remember how you said it. Don't worship other things. Don't worship any idols. Don't make idols and worship anything else. So I am the Lord your God. You must not worship any other gods except me. You must not make, worship or serve idols of any kind. Other gods, basically. Don't put them first. Do you know what the third one is? Not quite there yet. There's one more. It's one that's very commonly broken at the moment. Claire, yeah. What were you saying, Claire? No? Okay, hold that thought for later. Don't misuse God's name. Do not use the Lord's name in vain, as the old-fashioned translation was. Don't make empty promises with God's name. Don't know about you, but it's something I really struggle with in society when I hear God's name used wrongly, and the swear word all the time. It's one of the things I really struggle with. And then someone said, Sabbath. Remember the Sabbath day, keeping it a special day. Now, what I want you to notice about this, which is why I've got Patina holding this in this way, is these four commandments, they all point towards God, right? They're all focusing on God. They are God-centered, right? They have this kind of, this vertical dynamic, if we think of God vertically. I know God is everywhere, but let's think. This is sort of pointing upwards, raising our eyes to God. Okay, now, this is where I need another person to help. Anyone else willing to volunteer? Caesar, brilliant, thank you. Oh, Anchor, can you come and help Caesar, actually? Two of you, it would be useful. Because now we move to the others. And these others, the Sabbath begins to take us in this direction. Caesar, could you stand just that side of Patina? And Anchor, you stand this side. And between you, you're going to hold this. Because these others point in a different direction. Right, some of the ones that you shouted out. Let's see if we can get them in order. That's because I have them in order here. Honour your father and mother. We've got the Sabbath already, but the Sabbath does connect. You're right. The fourth one is the link between these two dimensions. Caesar, could you hold it up a little bit higher? Perfect. Even higher. There we go. Okay, so we've got honour your father and mother. Anyone for the next one? I love it. Barbara's got the Bible open. Just in case anyone's feeling really intimidated that Barbara just knows all of these. It's not cheating. We need to read the Bible. We need to know it and be comfortable with it. Do not murder anyone. Next one. Do not commit adultery. Be faithful. And then we had, Albert, what was the one you told me? Can you remember which one you told me? Can anyone remember what Albert told me? Don't steal. Was it lying? Okay, well, there's the stealing first and then there's the lying. Don't steal. Don't lie. What's the last one? The one that we often snigger about. Maybe that's just me. Do not covet your neighbor's ass. Do not covet. Do not want to take anything that belongs to another person. Just to explain what that word covet means, because that's just a complicated word, isn't it? Do not want to take anything that is someone else. Right. So the reason that I went through all of that process is the Ten Commandments are on two dimensions. There is the dimension that points towards God, and then there is the dimension that points to everyone else around us, those in the whole of society. And if you notice, they make a cross. Now, we often look at the cross of Jesus as a cross that shows God's love for us. I just want you to hold that in your mind. The cross can have so many levels. But I want to explain that the Ten Commandments are another way of God showing what love looks like. And so it's a cross, but it also is showing us what love looks like. Thank you so much. If your arms are not hurting, you can lay those down on the floor. But thank you very much, guys. It's really helpful to have it visually rather than me just describing it. Thank you. Go have a seat. So God's framework for a good way of living, forming your society, has two dimensions, both the spiritual, the world towards God, and then the social dimension, out to each other. And they are both ways of expressing love and living in love. Now, I just want to do a little note for those of you who are really nervous about verse 5. I am a jealous God. That bit. You remember that bit? We'll punish the sins of a generation to several generations. I should have a Bible up here with me. I apologize. Barbara, could you? Oh, no, you've closed your Bible now. Don't worry. Anyway, there is a bit that talks about God being a jealous God and punishing people for the sins and even to the next generation. I just want to say to you that there are challenging bits in the Bible, but we need to do some work of one, translation, go back to the original words. What do they actually mean? And two, compare with other parts of the Bible to work out, well, this jars. Why does this jar? Is this? Am I reading this wrong? And actually, another way of understanding this, I am a jealous God, is to translate it, I have a zeal for you. I am a passionate God. I love you to such a passionate extent that I want, desperately will do anything to keep you in the fold, to keep you as my people. That kind of jealousy in terms of, it's because I love you so much, I have such a passion, I don't want to see you walk away or wander away. And there are consequences to your actions and to not following this way. And those consequences have an effect on other people. And it may even be that it has an effect on generations to come, because these laws are actually such a the right way of living our lives. When we don't follow them, there are consequences, and they may well affect your children and their children. But my love is even greater than that, to a thousandth generation. So I just want to emphasize that understanding of what God is saying in this moment. Don't be completely put off by it. Let's think a bit more about what it means. Because I think that the whole of what these Ten Commandments are about, although we have often seen them just as a list of rules and a list of don'ts, a list of things that curtail our personal freedom, I actually think that in this context, when God is speaking to the Israelites with everything they've been through, all of the trauma and all of the abuse and mistreatment that they've suffered, they have this potential for living in a nothingness, an unstructured mob. And actually, these commandments are a gift for them within that. They are a way of God saying, I love you so much, I don't want you to live in fear anymore. I don't want you to live with this trauma. I don't want you to live in this unstructured, dangerous way. I want to show you how I love you and how you can love one another. And I think that is very true still for today. I think we live in a society where people can feel out of control. They can feel that there is, even though there is so much structure in our society, it can also begin to feel like there isn't, that people don't recognize the consequences of their actions, or that their actions have an impact on someone else. This is where these Ten Commandments can also speak to us. And actually, I think they still do speak to us, even those who have rejected all kinds of faith and religion, because there are so many rules of life and ways of living a good life and the best possible way to live your life that actually tie in so many of these Ten Commandments, even if they then take out the God bit. But if you take out the central pillar, where does the strength come from? The reason we can do all those horizontal looking bits is because of that central pillar of knowing God's love for us. So just to think a little bit more specifically about these Ten Commandments before we explore them for ourselves, we understand that the first three and the four is a bit of a transition, are God-oriented. Understanding God loves us, rescues us, frees us, and us choosing in response to love God solely, first, foremost, in our lives, is that central pillar. The strength for all, to give us the strength for all the rest. And then we are transitioning and we begin to stop looking upwards and centrally, and we can begin to look outwards at those around us. Remember the Sabbath, the importance of work-life balance. That's a massive thing in well-being at the moment. But here it's more than just our well-being. It's not a personal thing. This is actually about rest for everyone in society. Remember everyone. Remember those who are working for you. All of these things. This is looking outwards, looking at others' needs, not just our own. Honor your father and mother. Respect, care for, listen to the generation before. Don't dismiss the elderly, but give them the honor that is their due. Learn from their wisdom. Don't assume that you know it all and know it much better than they did, that they don't get it. Honor, respect, wisdom. Don't murder. I think that's pretty standard across all of humanity. But I wonder if there's an extension on it. Respect life. Respect life in all of its fullness, all of the life that God created. The longer, more and more recently, finally, we are discovering that we live in such a delicately balanced ecosystem, where if we destroy life in one area, of the biological world, it has a massive impact in another area. I wonder if our do not murder understanding needs to be slightly expanded to do not destroy life. Do not commit adultery. Respect other people. Don't use them. Don't play with people's hearts. Don't treat people as things. Be loyal. Understanding the power of the family unit for the strength of society. I think this is something that we are finally, maybe slowly, circling back to. Recognizing the importance of stability and faithfulness and commitment in establishing strong family units with which we can bring up families in society. Do not steal. Like the two before it and the one next, this is about trust in society. Communities don't flourish when every individual is out for themselves. Don't steal from each other. Don't lie to each other or about each other. We are more than a group of individuals, and we need to recognize our place and our impact on the wider community. And don't covet. Don't want what someone else has. Be content. Don't be envious. As soon as we begin to compare ourselves with others and we want what others have, we run that risk of becoming discontented, dissatisfied. We lose sight of the good that we do have. I spoke a few months ago about an attitude of gratitude to live each day by. Well, as soon as we compare and want what others have, our attitude of gratitude flies out the window. And then society just becomes a mass of people always wanting, always unhappy, always dissatisfied with their lot. I think crucially, what these Ten Commandments teach us, it's helpful to understand that God is speaking to a traumatized group of people in the desert. But what they speak to us now is about the fact that we are an interconnected society. Just like the Israelites in the desert, we still rely on each other. We have not become the point where we are islands. We each need to behave knowing that we have an impact on each other. Our actions have consequences. We can't just do what we want regardless of what other people suffer is a consequence. Because actually that way, I would argue, is a way of slavery. That is going back into a way, place where some people have power and others are abused. It is not a place where there is freedom for all. God's way, the Ten Commandments that God was giving, was a new way of to live in freedom for the Israelites. But it is a way for us now in our society and everything that we're facing to live in freedom. I wonder if you have ever thought about the Ten Commandments as an invitation for freedom for all. I wonder if you've ever connected the Ten Commandments with Jesus's wonderful summing up of all of them. Love God with all your heart and soul and mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. Those two dimensions, those two axes on which we base the way we live, not just us, but our whole society. So we are going to explore these Ten Commandments a little bit more, get to know them, get to really delve deep into them, think about them. There are, as usual, different ways in which we can explore it together and talk about it. One thing I have here is, this is a picture, an image from a secular organization, a pictorial representation of what makes up a good life. What would be constitute a good life for you if you had all of these things in place? And I just thought it was a very interesting exercise to look at this and look at the Ten Commandments and see where they amazingly overlap, even if this one doesn't mention God at all. But then you might like to think what it's missing, maybe. So you can have a look at these. If you want one, just wave your hand in a minute and I will bring them round. Or you might like, as a little group or by yourself, to write your own rules of a good life. You may think the Ten Commandments say it all, and we've now established we should just repeat those. But some of them need some translating, right? They're not always easy. So what would you set as rules for life that follow in this mould? You could write your own modern-day Ten Commandments or reword them. Or we have a collage, if you want to come and just stick things on paper and think about it. We have the central tenet, which is love God, love others, and then you can make a collage of all the ways we practically do that. How do we practically live that out? Come and fill that in, stick, and also there's obviously these, I keep wanting to call them fortune tellers, which is what they originally were, but they're not telling your fortune by any way. So there's lots of different ways to explore the Ten Commandments, think about them a bit more, think about how we could actually use them more and live with them more. See what Jesus did when he combined them into those two, love God, love others, those two axes. Let's talk about that, and then I'll bring us back together when we, as a prayer at the end. Hands up if anyone wants one of these, do wave. But let's just close in prayer, and then Barbara's going to come and continue us on in our intercessions. Lord God, thank you that your commandments do form the basis of our understanding how to function in society. And I pray that you would renew our interest in them and our understanding of them in light of how Jesus expanded on them too. So take all that we have talked about and discussed and thought about this morning, and continue to make it grow in our hearts, mull over in our minds, that we might know you better. Amen.